It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up on Central Time, a look at how Wisconsin's largest city ranks in terms of fostering black male achievement. First, it's our last conversation of 2015 with Harry Enten. He joins us every week at this time to talk national politics and elections. As an analyst, he makes a lot of predictions. Sometimes he's right, sometimes not. Today, in the name of transparency, he shares with us what he got wrong in 2015. We also look back at what Donald Trump meant in 2015, whether or not he wins the primary, and we take stock of the influence that David and Charles Koch had throughout the year and what they might have planned for 2016. Harry is a senior political writer and analyst for the online analysis and prognostication website 538. Harry, happy almost New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
So before we get into all the mistakes you made in 2015, there were just a few, actually, that you owned up to. Big news from George Pataki's campaign. Former New York governor dropped out of the race yesterday. Did you see that coming?
Oh, my goodness. What news that is. It was heard from everywhere, from 49th Street in Manhattan to 50th Street in Manhattan. I mean, this is fairly typical. Pataki, who was, you know, a three-term governor of New York, he was a fairly successful candidate in the state of New York, but he entered this presidential campaign well past his prime, and he really never got anywhere in the polls. I think we had 221 polls that were taken in Iowa, New Hampshire, and nationally, and I think he averaged somewhere around like 0.37% in them. His highest poll number of the year was 3%. And this is fairly typical of a campaign that has so many candidates in it. Usually people drop out. And Pataki is just the latest example of a candidate to drop out of this race.
It's pretty amazing when you think about presidential politics. Over the years, over the decades, we've seen a lot of people with very, you know, substantial political resumes, a lot of respect, at least for people who agree with them, or maybe impartial observers in their home state. And then they get into this national field, and it's really easy to be a laughingstock, a joke, that sort of thing. Why would anybody run for president?
You know, you'd have to ask somebody else, because I would never run for president. I don't understand these guys. Why would they subject themselves to potential humiliation? It makes no sense. I humiliate myself enough with the stuff I write. I don't need to get out there and share my personal life. I think that it comes down to a few things. I think, one, people like to be in charge. Some people, they like to shape the discussion, and there's no better place to shape the discussion and be in charge than being president of the United States. It's arguably the most powerful position in the entire world, a chance to really get to shape the future of our country and of the world. And so I think these guys genuinely, a lot of them genuinely want to help. But at the end of the day, there's a big difference between being able to be successful at governing the nation and actually convincing people that you can do so and be the best to do so.
Any thoughts on more candidates, especially on that large Republican field, who might drop out before a single vote is cast?
Yeah, so, we here at 538 did what was called a, dropout draft, and sort of the idea was trying to pick out who would go next, and we looked at news coverage, and we did all that stuff, and there were some picks that we made that maybe we shouldn't have made, but I think at this point, as we look at what's going on, there are really a few candidates that I would select. Number one might be somebody by the name of Rand Paul, who has always said if he couldn't get on the main stage for the next debate, then his campaign might decide to go adios amigos. And at this point, based upon the polls, and that's, of course, what the debates have used so far, Paul's in danger of not making the main stage for the next debate. Mike Huckabee is another person. There's been some chatter that he might drop out in the middle of next month and then not endorse anybody. Again, it's just chatter. And then the final person might be Carly Fiorina. If you've noticed, most of the people who have dropped out so far tend to be more from the mainstream establishment part of the party. And although Fiorina has never been successful in runs for political office, she's more closely aligned with those parts of the party. And she right now in the polls really isn't going anywhere. So one of those three is the most likely. But again, none of them may drop out.
It's our weekly look at national politics with Harry Enten from 538. And Harry, each year you write a piece looking back at mistakes you made in making predictions in the year in politics. Looking back, what do you see as your biggest mistake of 2015?
I would say my biggest mistake was probably not taking Donald Trump seriously enough. As we look forward to Iowa, we're almost nearly a month away from there, a little bit more than a month. I still don't think he'll win that caucus. I'm fairly sure he won't win the nomination. But I think we wouldn't. I wouldn't be being honest with myself or with my readers if I didn't acknowledge that I didn't really think he'd stick as long as he has and as high as he has. And you know, looking back at my posts, it's very clear that what I did was I was consistently saying he can't win, instead of saying, okay, he probably won't win, but here's why he's shaping the race. Here is how he's shaping the discussion. Here is why he might stick around. Here is why he is sticking around. I just didn't do a good enough job of explaining that to the readers, I felt.
So how has Trump shaped the race? What are you going to look for moving forward in how Trump is shaping the conversation and the race?
Well, you know, I think that there are multiple ways that he has, but one, to me, the most fascinating way that he has shaped the race is he has made Ted Cruz seem, to me, a lot more acceptable to mainstream Republicans. Remember, Cruz is this guy who arguably has the most conservative record in the United States Congress, certainly has the most conservative record if he were to get the nomination of anyone nominated by the Republican Party, probably ever. And he's someone who is not well-liked by the establishment. So when Cruz first entered the race, it was like, nah, there's no way it could be Cruz. But compared to Donald Trump, he seems almost like a model statesman. And I think that that is part of the reason why, as you see Cruz move up in Iowa, that he's being discussed more and more as a legitimate presidential contender, because if it's a race between him and Trump, then the establishment may have no other choice but to settle on Ted Cruz.
A big thing with Trump, and this is not just you, is that a lot of people, a lot of observers, data watchers, politics watchers have said, okay, he's on top for now. Sure. We've seen this before. People rise to the top and they drop. The bottom's going to fall out. We won't be hearing about Trump in a week or a month or something like that. And he keeps staying on top. Any reason to expect that wave to crest anytime soon?
So, you know, this is one of the things where I guess I'm going to stick to my horses a little bit more than I did in my article. And I should point out in my article we have a video attached, and it makes me look like a crazy person with my long hair and beard. I have shaved, and I have cut my hair, so I no longer look like that, in case anybody's wondering. But the reason why I would say that Trump would most likely fall off from where he is there's a big disparity from where he is in the national polls versus where he is in Iowa and New Hampshire. In fact, he's trailing in Iowa right now to Ted Cruz, and although he's leading in New Hampshire, he's leading with about the same percentage of the vote he has in Iowa. It's just that the establishment hasn't been able to coalesce around a candidate. But in systems that have plurality rule like we have, the most votes wins. And you have information for the voters in polls of who's up and who's down, there's probably going to be a coalescing around an opposition candidate to Trump. And my own guess, or my own forecast at this point, is he is probably going to lose Iowa and has a decent shot of losing in New Hampshire. And that's basically where his campaign falls apart. I expect his national numbers to sort of follow what's going on in Iowa and New Hampshire. We know that momentum means a lot in primary seasons. And so that is my general understanding, is he'll lose in Iowa. That will help him lose in New Hampshire, and then the whole bottom will kind of fall out. That's my thesis.
Here's an interesting analogy I came across. I wanted to throw it past you. A guy who wrote a book about Rob Ford, the mayor of Toronto, up there in Canada, said there's this mass of people, you know, a lot of people don't vote. They're non-voters. They don't trust politics. They think all politicians are liars. Everybody wonders how to get them to vote for them. Nobody can. But Rob Ford tapped into them, spoke their language, seemed like not one of those politicians that they distrust. That's how he got those people to go to the polls and vote for him. Donald Trump maybe going to do the same thing.
Yeah, so this is the sort of theory that the Trump people have sort of floated, is that there are a lot of people who didn't vote in the last election, and we're going to get them to turn out because we have an unconventional message with an unconventional candidate. So we can look at sort of the new registration numbers that are coming out from the Iowa Secretary of State and the New Hampshire Secretary of State. New Hampshire, it's fairly clear that there really hasn't been much of a change in the registration numbers there, new people registering. They do have same-day registration, so, you know, it's not as clear of a picture. But so far, we really haven't seen the types of numbers of people that are registering that you might expect if Trump was bringing new people into the process. And in Iowa, the same thing. There have been about a few thousand people who have registered for the Iowa Republican side leading up to the caucus. But again, it's not this massive wave that we're seeing. So, of course, it's possible Trump could bring new people in the process, but we're not seeing in the registration numbers and in the polling numbers, such as from Ann Selzer in Iowa, who asks everybody, basically, you're going to show up in caucus. She doesn't sort of make a very constricting screen. She basically allows the voters to tell them. She, in fact, has had Trump in a worse position than pretty much any other pollster has.
Talking to Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. We're taking stock of politics and election news in 2015, looking ahead to 2016. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Regardless of whether he's going to win the nomination or not, why do you think Trump was so popular? How did he change the race? What does it say about our social and political climate? In general, what surprised you in national politics this year? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538, taking stock of 2015 in national and campaign politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Your predictions for 2016, the presidential campaign trail and elsewhere. Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Harry, we're going to stick with Donald Trump and the campaign for a bit. We've got some callers who want to weigh in. Jade starts us off in Plover. Jade, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. It seems to me that Donald Trump seems to be having a psychological campaign, like he's feeding into the fear of the people, even though we live in a relatively, comparatively even, safe time. He's feeding into fear and avoiding any actual topics of politics, as, like social programs, funding for this or that, or foreign policy. And when we're talking about topics like that, especially foreign policy, I'm just wondering what a candidate who's based his whole campaign on fear can really do as a president.
Jade, thanks a lot for the call, Harry. And this is she's not the only one accusing Donald Trump of running an incendiary fear-based campaign out there.
Yeah, and I think that the caller has a great point, and I think that's part of the reason why Trump has not done as well in Iowa and New Hampshire as he has done nationally, and that is voters are really starting to look into the records of the candidates, what they've said, what their plans are for the future, and Trump really hasn't offered up very many specifics, which is part of the reason I think that a lot of analysts such as myself don't think that he'll end up going very far once the voting begins. But as for the point that he's, struck a fear-based campaign, we had a discussion yesterday on the website sort of talking about Donald Trump and who is he like, or is this new politics? And to me, he really strikes a chord very similar to George Wallace in 1968. A lot of fear-based campaigning, a campaign that really plays on fears of voters who feel like that they are losing a voice in the process, specifically white voters without a college education. That's who he's doing best among. And so it'll be very interesting to see who those voters, how they react to Trump as the campaign goes on, and who they might vote for in the fall and the upcoming years to come, and whether there'll be any sort of ramifications of Trump's run yet unknown.
Jade, thanks for the call. We'll go to Dustin next in Chautauqua. Dustin, hi.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
Oh, well, I just want to let you know I listen to NPR every morning. So, but I think Trump is going to bring us a lot of new ideas that I'm really curious to see how he's going to back them. And I'm a Trump supporter, because anytime I'm listening, I just hear positive things. And I believe that America is going to see these extreme changes, but are going to be curious enough to vote for him to get him into office.
And Dustin, do you have a particular policy you like what Trump is saying in particular?
Mostly from what I've been hearing, I just catch the news in the morning, is the immigration, his stance on immigration and border protection.
Dustin, thanks a lot for your call and sharing your thoughts. Harry, and that's something that is resonating with Trump supporters, is what he's had to say about border protection, what some people in the mainstream in particular are calling incendiary or inflammatory comments. Some people are definitely agreeing with what he has to say.
Absolutely. I think part of the reason why analysts such as myself may not have gotten the Trump phenomenon as quickly as perhaps we should have is we just aren't really tuned into the immigration debate. We live in cities on the East Coast which are fairly liberal when it comes to immigration policy. But if you look at where Trump is doing best, it's on immigration. That's who voters who care most about that issue are really lining up behind Trump. And that's one of the things that people don't really remember about Mitt Romney's run in 2012, was that he was potentially the furthest quote-unquote, right on immigration. And that was part of the reason that he was able to get through that primary despite having some other positions that were maybe less in line with the Republican base. So to me, one of the big stories coming out of both out of the Republican field this year, but also 2012, is we talk about pro-life issues or abortion issues as sort of being the litmus test for Republican candidates, but immigration may in fact be one as well, as Donald Trump is clearly showing it has a lot of resonance among Republican voters.
But there's a division within Republicans. You're pointing toward that, and there are pro-business Republicans who want maybe not full-on immigration reform, but easier paths to citizenship for people or guest worker status for workers that they need in their businesses.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's part of the reason why Trump, while he may lead in the national polls with the most people saying they want him, he's often also leading among when they ask the question, who do you absolutely not want? He usually also ranks very high. He's a divisive figure within the party, but so far the Trump, the faction that's pro-Trump has been large enough that it's been able to keep him into the lead. So we'll see, though, going forward, whether or not that will continue to be the case. My guess is not, but we'll see.
Dustin, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Nick in Brilliant. Nick, hi.
Hi, Rob. You know, I've really been flabbergasted by the media and the fundamental constituents of the base, like not the base, but the party who keeps on reelecting these people who ship our jobs out of the country, who do all these bailouts. Who, you know, John Kasich was part of Lehman Brothers when it crashed. I mean, how many bailouts, how many things do we need before we wake up and stop electing these people?
Nick, thanks for the call. So frustration, and Nick's probably not alone with what people see as establishment candidates, Harry.
You know, one of the most interesting poll numbers to me over the last few years has been the right track, wrong track of this country, where consistently more people have said we're on the wrong track than the right track. And we really haven't seen sort of the effects of that in politics. You know, last year, for instance, there were all these thoughts, oh, it's going to be an anti-establishment year, or it's going to be an anti, you know, all the candidates who are running, we're going to replace everybody. But in fact, most candidates won their primaries, and most Republicans pretty much won. It was just the Democrats who had a bad year. But this Trump phenomenon and the phenomenon of Trump being high and Cruz being high and Sanders doing fairly decently on the Democratic side, I think is a manifestation of a lot of this anger. People just don't think Washington cares anymore, and they're not seeing anything. And so while in the past a candidate like Trump might not have gone anywhere, people are so upset that they're saying, you know what? Trump may not be perfect, but the system as it is right now is unsustainable, and we need to go in another direction. I don't think that voice is going to be enough that, you know, it ends up propelling Trump to win the nomination, but it could be enough to at least scare the establishment, and more than that, be enough so that someone like Ted Cruz, who in the beginning of the year most people thought didn't have a chance, might actually end up winning the Republican nomination.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com about national politics. I want to hit a couple more points briefly, Harry. Something that's flared up in part, again, because of Donald Trump, is the role that Bill Clinton will play in the campaign, specifically as a target of Republicans. People bringing up his history of extramarital affairs, allegations of sexual harassment, even allegations of sexual assault, and then arguments over whether that's fair game. So Bill Clinton as target for the Hillary Clinton campaign, what does it mean?
I mean, to me, it doesn't matter whether it's fair game or not. It's going to be played. And in politics, if something's effective, it's going to be played. And, you know, there have been columns that have been written by some not-so-conservative folks that say that this is fair game. And I think that Bill Clinton, I think most people would agree, has had a questionable track record when it comes to women. And if Hillary Clinton wants to bring him on the trail and pump him up as the surrogate, then he's going to have to answer for these questions. And this is nothing new. I mean, you know, politics has been dirty for hundreds of years. I mean, Andrew Jackson's wife was brought into the campaign in 1828 and then died after the campaign, and Jackson blamed John Quincy Adams for it, his opponent. Dirty politics is nothing new. Trump has every right, in my opinion, to bring it up. And then whether or not it's acceptable or part of the normal discourse, the voters will decide. And if they think it is, then Hillary Clinton's in trouble, and if they think it isn't, then her opponents are going to be in big trouble.
One more thing to get to before we're done. Money and politics, not a new thing, but a big piece in Politico says David and Charles Koch, their political operations, bring a lot of money into politics, is something new. They're not just supporting the Republican Party or Republican candidates, they're creating their own infrastructure around the country, separate and maybe even superior to the Republican Party campaign infrastructure that has people, Democrats certainly worried, some Republicans worried too. Do you see them having a big role in 2016?
I mean, money will always have a role in our politics, but I think that we learned from Jeb Bush's campaign that money isn't everything. You can have as much money in the world as possible, but if the people aren't buying what you're selling, then it doesn't matter how shiny you make it. So we'll see. Because this is a new phenomenon, I think it's very risky to comment whether or not it will have a large effect. But my opinion is always to wait and see and to be suspect that things that haven't been proven before to work will actually end up working this time around.
We'll leave it there for 2015, Harry. Look forward to talking to you next year.
Sounds good. Happy New Year.
To you, too. That's Harry Enten. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time with the latest in the world of national politics.